Opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I am your host, David Pruse. Today's a Friday. We usually talk about those things we get to do over the weekend, but I have on the air with me, calling in from Illinois, Brad Keithley, great economist. And Brad, how you doing, sir?
David, I'm doing great today. Thanks for asking. How about you?
I'm doing well, enjoying the Fairbanks weather here. We're, you know, hitting the 25 to 35 temperature range and just enjoying ourselves. You're visiting Illinois from Anchorage, and we're coming into the final fourth quarter of the Alaska State Legislature. What are you thinking?
I focus mostly on budget issues and mostly on our fiscal situation, and it's a huge challenge. When you look at FY24, the budget they're working on now, the potential deficit is huge. With the statutory PFD, if you don't divert any of the PFD over to help pay for the budget, we have a deficit of something in the neighborhood of $1.2 billion, and that's before you take into account any increased spending for K-12, and it's before you take into account any spending for the capital budget. Even if you divert, even if you go to what's called POMV 50-50, which is taking 50% of the permanent fund, of the percent of market value draw from the permanent fund that the legislature does now, taking 50%, just 50% of that for the PFD, and taking the remainder of that for government, you still have a deficit of $700 million before adding any more for K-12 spending or any more for the capital budget. So legislature's facing some big choices this year. It gets worse in the future. I mean, this is based upon the FY24 numbers are based on oil prices that are still barely, but still in the 80s, the mid 70s, and the oil prices are projected to go down even from there. So it's a big challenge. The legislature is working on it, but those are big numbers to be dealing with.
Very much so. I saw where Mr. Carpenter out of the Kenai Peninsula, he came out with a sales tax law.
Yep. We need revenue one way or another to close the deficit. There's virtually no appetite for closing the deficit through reducing spending. We went through that in 2019. The governor proposed it. The legislature rejected it. The governor hasn't even tried again since then. So there's virtually no appetite for closing it through spending cuts. And in fact, the pressures this session are on spending increases, on increasing the BSA, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And on having more than, I mean, some would like to have more than just a moderate capital budget. So we need, there's got to be revenues. I mean, with that kind of deficit, there's got to be revenues. And there's several proposals on the table on how to deal with it. One is oil taxes. That was the first oil tax bill that Senator Wilkowski proposed, had its first hearing today in Senate Finance, first hearing this morning in Senate Finance. The other way is to take it out of Alaskans and somehow have Alaskans pay for a portion of their government somehow, and that's PFD cuts would do that in one way. Representative Carpenter has proposed sales taxes, which would do it in another way, actually in a lower impact way than PFD cuts. So, I mean, they're struggling with revenues. There's various proposals out there. Senate Finance has proposed cutting the PFD down to 25% of the percent of market value draw.
Wow.
And diverting 75% of that percent of market value draw over to government to, in a way, to try to close the deficit. There's all sorts of proposals out there. Benz is one of the most recent ones, but there may be more by the time we get to the end of the session.
Yeah, I don't foresee any revenue kickers like that one passing this session. Maybe it'll get a good review next session, and we'll see. But it's a little bit late to introduce something like that now and get the needed committee hearings held and getting people on board with it and understanding it.
It is. I think most of these, I mean, Ben's committee, he chairs Ways and Means, which is tasked this session, this legislature, the next 2 years, tasked with coming up with a long-term fiscal plan.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben has said the chance of getting a long-term fiscal plan through this session, this year's session, is like 1%.
Yeah.
So most of these are geared toward longer term, addressing them over the interim and then going at them next session. Of course, next session's an election year, and you always have strange things happening during an election year.
Yeah, everyone wants to be reelected.
But the problem we're running into, David, I mean, they couldn't cover the deficit this year with what's remaining in the constitutional budget reserve, the remaining savings account. We've already drained the statutory budget reserve long ago,
mm-hmm.
And we've got a little bit left in the constitutional budget reserve. We've taken something like $12 billion out of it since the beginning of the 2010s. But we've got a little bit left in it, and they can cover this year's deficit out of the constitutional budget reserve. So they might get by one more year. But frankly, the constitutional budget reserve is almost drained. So we are getting to the point where we're going to have to make some hard decisions, fairly long-term decisions about how we're going to continue to fund the scope of government that we've come up with.
Yeah, and, you know, everyone is, I shouldn't say everyone, but you have many entities such as the teachers, schools, school districts saying we've not had a base student allocation increase in, what, 10, 12 years?
Yeah, since the mid 2000s, or 20 teens, rather. And we've had one-time increases. I mean, the legislature has appropriated one-time money most of the years since that, but a systematic formula-driven increase or increase in the formula hasn't occurred since the mid-2010s. But, you know, everybody, I understand the pressures for increasing spending, but we don't have revenue. I mean, oil prices haven't gone up to match that. In fact, oil prices have gone down since the early 2010s, and we don't have the revenues to support that kind of spending. This session has been a little strange. It started out sort of everybody going full blast on increasing the BSA and increasing the capital budget and to some degree increasing the university and proposals for the state to help fund child care and proposals for the state to fund various other things. And it was just, I mean, I was sitting there looking at that.
How do you do it?
And then looking at oil prices
yeah.
on my other screen and going, there aren't revenues.
Yeah, exactly. As you were saying it, I was saying to myself, how do you do that? It's not there. And like you said, tough choices have to be made.
Right. And to some degree, people just assume, oh, we'll just keep taking the PFD. But I think there's a recognition, frankly, a growing recognition perhaps, the PFD cuts aren't free money. I mean, they have an impact on Alaska families.
Yeah,
they have an impact on the Alaska economy. You're converting what's money that would otherwise go to the private sector, support Alaska families, particularly middle and lower income Alaska families, help support the private sector of the Alaska economy. You're converting, diverting, taxing that money and taking it over to the government side. So It's not a free shot, and I think people are coming to the realization that in fact PFD cuts do have a big impact on the economy and on Alaska families, and that's why you find people like Will Lukowski searching or advocating increased oil taxes, and Ben Carpenter one of the most conservative members of the legislature suggesting we look at sales taxes as a way to increase revenue, recognizing that the PFD cuts aren't the cure-all that some people have thought.
Yeah. What we're going to do now, Brad, is we're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be back right after this, okay?
Great.
And Fairbanks, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-825, if you want to call into the show.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Glass Doctor is known as the home, auto, and business glass shop. But what do we mean when we say home? At Glass Doctor, we fix your panes, but we do a lot more than just window panes. How about a custom glass shower enclosure? Or add a classy glass top to your kitchen or coffee table. Mirrored walls or just a bathroom mirror? Yes, we can certainly replace that broken or fogged insulated unit and more. What can we do for you today? Find out more at glassdoctor.com.
Call the Glass Doctor, we'll fix your panes. Okay.
Hey Fairbanks, Denali Industrial Supply and Makita Tools would like to thank you for visiting them at the IABA Home Show. In case you missed it, the Makita Spring Sale continues through the end of April, but only while supplies last. So stop by Denali Industrial Supply and talk to their helpful sales staff to get the tools to make your projects quick and easy. These deals won't last long, and they're only at Denali Industrial Supply, your locally owned and operated Makita Tool headquarters. Denali Industrial Supply, 1499 Van Horn Road. Just look for the big red roof.
After 5 years, Alaska Comedy proud to welcome back a Fairbanks favorite, the hilarious Chris Porter. Catch Chris live Wednesday, March 29th at the North Pole Ale House. Thursday at the Spur, Friday and Saturday, the 31st and April 1st at the Firehouse Theater inside Goldie's. Shows start at 7 p.m. Tickets available in advance at aktickets.com. The Alaska Comedy Showcase with Chris Porter, brought to you by Zach's Restaurant at Sophie Station and KFAR Radio. For more info, go to alaskacomedy.com.
KFAR Weather.
Snow likely today, otherwise cloudy skies. Highs level off around 26. Winds out of the west around 5 miles an hour. Snow likely tonight, 11. Overcast. Cloudy tomorrow, snow likely 29. 1 to 3 inches of snow today through Sunday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Brad Keithley calling in here. Now, Brad, let's take a look at Bill Wilikowski's bill first, and that affects the NPRA taxation.
It affects all of Alaska production. Well,
okay.
All of North Slope production. I think it excludes Cook Inlet, but it affects all of North Slope production.
What does it do? What does it change?
Well, Wilikowski's got three proposals, three pieces to it. One is to decrease the per barrel credit. We have a progressive oil tax. The higher the oil tax price, the higher the tax. And one of the ways that we do that is we have what are called per barrel credits that help adjust the price, help adjust the tax rate as the price goes up. Reducing those credits would increase the tax rate at the prices that we are now and that we anticipate going to over the next decade. So one proposal is to decrease the per barrel credits, and that would have that would increase sort of the base tax. The second is to what's called ring fence various projects on slope. Right now, Conoco, for example, can take the capital expenditures and the costs that it incurs in developing Willow, for example, or any of its projects against its tax obligation. And so as they ramp up Willow, actually Conoco's taxes will go down.
And we get no revenue from it.
In the near term, right, because, well, there won't be any revenue because we won't have production. But on top of that, they'll be able to take the capital costs right now under the current tax code. They'll be able to take the capital costs as a deduction to their taxes. Ring fencing is a concept that says any expenses incurred in connection with a project like Willow stay with Willow. They can't be used to offset revenues elsewhere on the North Slope. And so we wouldn't have that income or that revenue hit from Willow in the early stages as it starts to ramp up. And Willikowski's got one other piece to his tax proposal that would also increase revenues. It is to fix what's been called the Hilcorp glitch in the tax code. When Hilcorp bought BP, there was a change in the revenues coming from Prudhoe Bay. Under the tax code, BP as a C corporation paid corporate income taxes. Hilcorp is organized as an LLC, as an S corporation, and so it does under our existing tax code, it doesn't pay income taxes from its activities on the North Slope. And Willikowski's proposal would fix that glitch as well.
Hmm. What about Ben Carpenter's sales tax?
So Ben's sales tax is 2% across the board sales tax. There are no exclusions or exemptions other than business to business transactions. You wouldn't charge a sales tax from one business selling to another business. It's what's called the South Dakota style sales tax, which means it's very broad. It includes a broad range of sales of businesses or a broad range of transactions. And that has the effect of lowering the rate because the divisor is bigger, right? The base it applies to is bigger. They haven't come up with an estimate of how much that would raise yet. One third-party estimate that looked at a similar proposal a couple of years ago said about $700 million. But it's not clear whether that would be the same with Ben's proposal. Ben's proposal, like any sales tax, Ben's proposal also is regressive. That means it takes more from middle and lower income Alaska families than it would from the upper income Alaska families as a percent, as a share of income. Mm-hmm. That's because middle and lower income Alaska families use more of their income to buy things than upper income families do. They tend to, as a share of income, upper income Alaska families tend to save more or invest more than actually use their money to buy things. Middle and lower income Alaska families use almost all their money to buy things. So it would have a regressive impact it, like the PFD, affecting middle and lower income Alaska families more.
Hmm. No one with an income tax yet?
No, there's been discussion of it. Cliff Groh in House Ways and Means, Cliff Groh's from Anchorage, representative from Anchorage, in House Ways and Means Wednesday night raised the argument that an income tax would be much less regressive. It would have a much lower impact on middle and lower income Alaska families, adverse impact, than a sales tax would. But that was just in the course of debate. He hasn't proposed an income tax bill, and no one else has proposed an income tax bill yet.
What about raising taxes on the fisheries?
That has been talked about. The challenge with it is, at least according to the data that's publicly out there, fishing profits are relatively thin, and per unit, and to get any kind of revenue out of them, you'd have to raise the rates to levels that most observers have said would make fishing uneconomic. So there's a lot of there in terms of fish,
yeah,
and there's a lot of there in terms of activity. But you can't do it like oil taxes. You can't tax heavily because fish aren't sold at the same sort of profitability level that oil is sold at.
You know, we could have had this discussion 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
We could have. The reason we didn't, well, some of us were having the discussion. I think I've been on the show before talking about this.
Yes, we have.
But the reason it hasn't gotten serious is because we had savings.
Yeah.
We've blown through $15 billion, I forget what the number is now, somewhere south of $20 billion, but north of $15 billion in savings between the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, and the Statutory Budget Reserve since the early 2010s. Every year, the statement was, well, we're going to get a fiscal plan, or we're going to cut spending, or we're going to get this under control. We're just going to use savings to get us to that next year when we're going to do all this. And we never did. And over the course of the last 10 years, we used up all the SBR. We started into the CBR. Now we're almost all the way through the CBR. And then we started in 2016. Governor Walker started into the PFD.
Yeah, he was the one who broke the veil.
Right, and started using the PFD as just another kitty, if you will, for, to help support government. And so, you know, we've always found some way to put it off. As I said, we're this year we probably can get it through one more time without doing something serious.
Yeah.
But we're going to use up the constitution. What's remaining, almost use up the remaining of the constitutional budget reserve in doing so. Now the conversations now is, how low can we go? We need cash for cash management. I mean, the state needs some cash mm-hmm. for cash management. It needs to pay for some things before it gets the revenue in.
Mm-hmm.
Oil taxes always lag a little bit. You know, the permanent fund, the POMV draw will lag a little bit. And so we need cash to sort of get through the year. And now the discussion is, how much cash do we need? We don't want to take more from the CBR or from the SBR or from cash management than we need to get through the year. So we've gotten to the point where we're seriously considering what that minimum level of cash is now. And that's going to be the basement below which hopefully we don't go. Because if we do go below that, then you start talking about whether paychecks bounce, and nobody wants that. So, hopefully we can get through one more year by drawing down on savings, but we're about at the point where that justification for delay or that excuse to not face up to it is gone.
I know we have a revenue issue, but what about an expense issue?
David, I could spend days.
I know, that's why I asked it politely, Brad. Big softball.
In the mid 20 teens and then in the late 20 teens, I spent a lot of time talking about expenses. I spent a lot of time talking about the university, a lot of time talking about K-12, a lot of time talking about a variety of places where we spend money in the state. But that all came to a head in 2019 when Governor Dunleavy tried to act on a lot of those ideas and ideas that others had, and proposed to get spending down to a level that our traditional revenues, oil plus the POMV draw that's supposed to go to government under the current statute, is supposed to go to government, to get spending down to the level that could support it. And we saw the explosion and the pushback and the effort to recall the governor and the variety of other reactions that occurred when we tried that in 2019. Nobody's been serious about it since. The best we've sort of gotten is, well, let's hold constant. Let's stay constant. See if we can hold the line. But revenues have been dropping away from us. Oil prices have gone down, production's gone down some, and revenues have been running away from us. So we have a situation where even by holding spending constant, which we've not been able to do, but even by holding spending constant, the deficits have been growing and the draw on savings have been increasing simply because of the fact that revenues have been declining. So I can go through a lot of the stuff that I went through in the mid 20 teens and then the late 20 teens about where we could cut spending, but there is just not a serious interest in that legislature. One story out of 2019 just continues to go over and over in my mind. When the legislature had passed the budget in 2019 and the governor was coming to decide on his vetoes, was coming up to the decision on vetoes, the legislature essentially punted the ball, said, we're not going to cut spending here. It's in your court.
Sorry about that.
Nope. You want me to finish the story?
Yeah, go ahead and finish the story, and then we'll take our break.
Okay, well, when the governor was coming up on deciding the vetoes, he checked. The governor would need 16 legislators to back him on veto. So he went to his core supporters and said, "I need your support. I'm prepared to veto heavily, but you got to back me up and vote to uphold when I make the vetoes." And every legislator said, "Governor, I'm with you. except in this one area. I don't want you to cut this area, but I'm with you on all the others. And by the time you added up all of the excepts, there wasn't much left to veto.
Oh, goodness.
So when the governor vetoed in 2019, he didn't veto at near the level that he'd initially proposed.
Brad, we got to take our break now. We'll be back.
Yeah.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Former President Trump's expected to be arraigned Tuesday after a Manhattan grand jury voted to indict him.
The grand jury investigated the former president's involvement in a $130,000 hush money payment made during the 2016 presidential campaign to adult film star Stormy Daniels. The indictment remains under seal. Defense attorneys say the district attorney's office has agreed not to handcuff the former president when he turns himself in.
Fox's Tanya J. Powers, Trump taking to social media to call the indictment political persecution. Before departing to Mississippi to survey storm damage, President Biden had a message to Russia, which arrested a Wall Street Journal reporter on espionage charges. Evan Gershkovich is the first American reporter to be detained in Russia since the Cold War. The newspaper denies he was involved in any spying activities. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Minute reports that Alaska's elected representatives spoke to proposed changes in the current election system on Tuesday. The House State Affairs Committee heard public testimony Tuesday afternoon on House Bill 1 and House Bill 37. House Bill 1, introduced by Representative George Auger from Sutton, proposes to repeal ranked choice voting and return Alaska to the previous process for elections. Auger told the committee that he's heard many complaints from residents that the voting process was confusing. Julie Lucky from Alaskans for Better Elections said, "We do oppose House Bill 1 and would like to see the current election system stay in place." She said that ranked choice voting returns power and choice to voters, keeps representatives accountable, and creates fewer barriers to entry for citizens to run for office. She said that 99.94% of ballots were correctly filled out following the November 2022 election, and that ranked choice voting created a larger, more diverse candidate pool. House Bill 37, introduced by Representative Calvin Schrag from Anchorage, would implement same-day voter registration, eliminate the witness signature requirement, and implement a ballot curing process.
Online at KFAR660.com.
After 5 years, Alaska Comedy proud to welcome back a Fairbanks favorite, the hilarious Chris Porter. Catch Chris live Wednesday, March 29th at the North Pole Ale House. Thursday at the Spur, Friday and Saturday, the 31st and April 1st at the Firehouse Theater inside Goldie's. Shows start at 7 p.m. Tickets available in advance at aktickets.com. The Alaska Comedy Showcase with Chris Porter, brought to you by Zach's Restaurant at Sylphie Station and KFAR Radio. For more info, go to alaskacomedy.com.
McKinley Orthopedic and Sports Medicine provides the highest quality of orthopedic surgical and non-surgical care for patients. From elite athletes to weekend warriors, pediatric care, or young athletic adults to aging athletes that don't want to slow down, all patients benefit from McKinley Orthopedic and Sports Medicine's expertise. The goal is to get you back in the game, whether that means sport, work, or simply everyday life. The entire staff is dedicated to serving patients in a professional, efficient, and compassionate manner. McKinley Orthopedic and Sports Medicine on Geist Road, just off of University Avenue.
It starts with spaghetti noodles and boiling water. A combination of beef, breadcrumbs, parsley, and of course garlic to form the meatballs. Slowly sauteing the meatballs with mushrooms, onions, and more garlic. Placing the spaghetti on a plate topped with old world style marinara sauce and three flavorful meatballs. A sprinkle of Parmesan on top of it all, your mouth begins to water. You open your eyes, you're at Giraldo's.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Brad Keithley on the phone with me. How you doing there, sir?
I'm doing great.
So how's your weather in Illinois?
Oh, we just went through a rainstorm. We went through breakup down here several weeks ago, and now we're sort of into spring. Things are greening up, and leaves are coming on trees and golfing is starting. If I time this right, I can get back to Alaska just about the time we finish breakup and we hit the same cycle. So
hitting leaf day soon. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I'm trying to get the best of out of the deal.
So Governor Dunleavy tried to get expenses under control. or I should say, aligned with the revenue that was coming in. And
right.
you just have so many people with a pet project, like you said, or a pet. And
it was amazing how many people came up with pet projects and how many different pet projects there were.
I'm sure. Poor guy. But he got reelected, so what the heck?
Well, he got reelected, yeah, and he survived the recall, and he got reelected, but he's not made cutting spending. I mean, he'll say those words every once in a while.
Yeah.
Depending upon the audience, but he's not made that a priority. And we're well past the point, frankly, where revenues have continued to decline, and we're well past the point where cutting spending is a realistic alternative to resolving the situation. There will be revenues. The question is what type of revenues, where they come from, who pays, who bears the burden, and that's really the issues that we're getting into now.
If you looked at it, which ones would you recommend?
Oh, so there is some room for increased oil taxes. I think Senator Wilikowski has a good point with respect to reducing the per barrel credits. Even the Department of Revenue, even the administration's Department of Revenue, did some studies a little over a year ago, that showed that the per barrel credits could be reduced without significant impact on per barrel credits decreased, which would increase taxes. Without significant increase. The Hillcorp glitch, we should have closed long ago. It's a $100 million glitch that was created by the fact that Hillcorp is formed different corporately than BP. It has nothing to do with costs, has nothing to do with production, has nothing to do with investment. It's simply a $100 million glitch in revenue as a result of the way Hillcorp is organized as an LLC. And that we should have closed long ago. Where I think the rubber's going to meet the road, there's going to be substantial opposition, is on ring fencing.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why people advocate ring fencing because of things like the upcoming Willow project and the impact that could have on revenues. But Conoco is going to tell us that they counted on ring fencing in running their economics on Willow, and they will say something along the lines of, it would be a shame if now that we got Willow through the Biden administration, it was undone by the legislature, undermining the economics by undoing ring fencing. So I think that's going to be, I personally don't favor doing ring fencing because I think it's a step beyond. On the other side, I think individual Alaskans need to make contributions as well. Part of that comes from PFD restructuring. We could pick up about $500 million by restructuring PFDs from the current statutory method to what's called POMV 50-50, splitting the percent of market value draw equally between government and Alaska citizens. I think that's still in line with what Governor Hammond initially visualized. But there's a point at which we go too far in PFD. There's a point at which we can go too far in all of these, And I think going beyond POMV 50-50 in cutting the PFD, restructuring the PFD is too much. And so that still leaves some revenue need. And I think, David, we've discussed on the show before, I'm an advocate of what's called a flat tax,
mm-hmm.
which is taking the same percentage share of income from all Alaskans, regardless of what income bracket they're in. So if it's a 2% flat tax or a 3% flat tax, it would be 3% from the top income earners, as well as 3% from the low income earners. They would come at the low income earners still would come out better by using that sort of flat tax as opposed to additional PFD cuts. They would still come out with a net gain, avoiding PFD cuts and paying the tax instead. So I think that's fair. Some people talk about progressive income taxes, which would take more from top income earners than middle and lower income earners. I think that's unfair, and I think the reverse is unfair, which is either PFD cuts or sales taxes, which take more from middle and lower income income brackets than from the top income brackets, sort of reverse, well, it's regressivity, sort of a reverse progressive income tax, taking more from the middle and lower segments than they do from the upper segments. I think a flat tax across the board gives all Alaskan families skin in the game. It creates an incentive in all of them to push back on the unnecessary spending. It gives all of them an equal share, an equal stake in funding government. And I think it has a lot to recommend it. So it'd be some adjustments to oil taxes, some adjustments to the PFD in terms of restructuring it down to POMB 50-50, and then a flat tax to fill in the remaining gap.
We're going to take a phone call now. When we take it, in past, you cannot hear the questions or discussion from the caller. Hopefully the engineers got that fixed. So we're going to take that right now, okay?
Sure.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with Brad Keithley, and your name is?
Hey, it's Rick.
Hello, Rick. Brad, hey. Brad, did you hear that?
I didn't.
Okay, Rick, Brad can't hear what you're saying, so I'm going to relay it.
Sure. Yeah, I've been here off and on because I was military. I came up and then left and came up and decided to stay here. But every year I hear the same thing about the budget. Now, I'm not disagreeing. I'm not saying we don't. A few years ago, oil was in the there was no money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then the oil went up. And we got a little bit of money, and now we're back to the oil has. I watch it every night on the news. It hasn't changed that much, and yet we're paying $4 a gallon. That's one thing. The other thing is taxes. The only people that are going to end up paying the taxes are the people in the city. People in the rural, they're not going to pay that tax. They don't have a job. That's one thing. The last thing is I don't see anything the legislature is doing to save money themselves. And what I mean by that is, I know everybody laughs when I say this, but when I go see my doctor and it's on the TV and I got to talk to him because he's down in Anchorage, boy, we can do that, and that's on a heart problem, but yet we can't do a finance problem in your hometown over the internet instead of paying them per diem. That's all I got to say. Thanks a lot, and I'm listening. Great show, Dave.
Thank you very much. You take care, buddy. Have a great weekend. Okay, Brad, boy, let's see. As usual, we've all heard this coming out of the legislature, you know, revenues are bad, revenues go up, revenues go down, nothing's going to be done. Also, if there's an income tax, people in rural Alaska won't be paying it because they're not working, per se. And, you know, things like that, just general discussion of we've been through this before, excuse me,
yep.
You know, we've heard this before. We've heard it and heard it and heard it and heard it. Nothing changes. And so anyway.
Well, I think the difference this time, David, is we've run out of savings. I mean,
You're right there. They've always been able to go to the bank. Now there's no bank.
We heard it through the 20 teens. Yes, I was the one saying it. And frankly, the way we papered it over every year was just by drawing down savings and say, we're going to get at it next year. By gosh, we're going to come in. We're going to get at it next year. Remember Lyman Hoffman once explaining, once saying at 2017, 2018, somewhere in there, next year, we're going to cut $300 million out of this budget. Well, the budget ended up going up by $500 million or something. I mean, and every year we've just drawn down savings more and more and more, and we're effectively out of savings after this year. So something's got to give, and it's either in some way there will be some revenue source, either deeper PFD cuts or taxes or oil taxes or something. There will be some revenue source.
We're going to take another phone call real fast, okay?
Sure.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with Brad Keithley, and your name is?
Hi, this is Tim.
Hello, Tim.
I didn't hear the whole show, but did you guys talk about the legislative pay increase?
No, we have not talked about the legislative pay increase, but I brought that up on Monday.
I think I heard you. Yeah, 67%.
Yeah.
You got enough to pay 67% increase in legislative pay. We don't have a budget problem. Thanks to you.
You know, thank you for that. That was great. We're getting them lined up now, Brad. Hold on here. We got another one coming in. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
Jay.
Hello, Jay. How are you doing?
Good. Hey, I just wanted to bring up a small point that most people don't know, and you never hear coming out of Juneau, and that is the workers for the state of Alaska.
What about the workers for the state of Alaska?
Probably get a lot of booze over this, but years ago, working for the state was one of the best jobs you could have.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays the pay for the state workers hasn't really changed a whole lot. In fact, I've seen pay raises of like 1% over 3 years, and it's first of all, that's not very helpful. The private sector jobs, and I know there's always a difference between private and government jobs, but the private sector jobs are almost double what the state is paying. And the other issue is that the starting wage gap is tremendous when you can go to Walmart and make more money stocking shelves than you can beginning a state job. And they're talking about the retirement, but you can't get entry-level people engaged in providing services for the state at a much lower wage by saying, well, the retirement system is good.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the younger guys and ladies, they're not thinking about retirement when they're 20, 21, 22, 23.
Okay, I'm gonna take one more phone call, then I gotta take a break, okay, buddy?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. And we'll come back and address that after our break. Good morning, you're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
It's Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Good morning, and thanks for the show. My question is, you know, are we ever going to get square with these oil taxes? I mean, it just, maybe I'm a layman, but from where I'm sitting, it just seems like we really are not getting our fair share with the oil taxes, and that includes some of the mining stuff that's going on in this state, like this Manh Choh project, for example, where we're going to spend lots and lots of money supporting an industry that really isn't contributing.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out why that's the responsibility of my children to pay for that and myself. And so that's my question. You know, yeah. Are we going to do something with this resource development and Alaska getting its fair share?
Okay, we're going to take a break. I appreciate the phone call. When we come back, I'll go over this with Brad Keithley, and we will have more discussion. Brad, talk to you in a few moments, okay? Okay.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Did you know that 45 is the new 50? Well, at least when it comes to getting screened for colorectal cancer. As the new guidelines now suggest, both men and women screen by age 45 instead of 50, particularly if you have a history of the disease in your family. So if you're 45 or getting close, schedule your appointment today so that you can have a healthier tomorrow. This message courtesy of Alaska Medicine and Endoscopy, corner of 20th and Lathrop, online at akmedicine.com.
When you find an automotive repair shop with service you can trust, that's a big deal. That's why so many of our Napa Auto Care Center's customers tell their friends and neighbors about us. Stop by today and pick up your referral cards. When one of your friends comes in for vehicle service or repairs, our Napa Auto Care Center will reward you.
Get your Napa referral cards today at Expressway Auto, your Napa Auto Care Center in North Pole.
Weather brought to you by The Woodway, your steel outdoor power equipment dealer for Interior Alaska. See the full line of steel products at The Woodway today. The Alaskan way, the right way, The Woodway.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies this afternoon with snow likely. High of 26, west winds around 5 miles per hour. Overcast tonight, snow likely. Lows dip down to about 11. Snow likely again tomorrow. Highs level off around 29. Overcast skies. 1 to 3 inches of snow today through Sunday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Brad, welcome back. And I must apologize to you and all of Fairbanks about our phone system here. not being able to, for Brad not being able to hear the caller's questions, and there were some very good questions there. And I apologize about trying to keep it short so I could get back to Brad here. But Brad, one caller brought up about state workers, and you know, in the past, you know, the state worker job was the best that you could get, but over the years, that has eroded. You're in a type 4 retirement system, pension system now, 401k. And it's not as attractive as it used to be. And a lot of, you know, private company, Walmart starting wages can also be better than starting wages at the state.
Yeah. So I mean, that's just part of the attrition we've been through. And
yeah,
as I said earlier, when we got into the mode where we didn't have enough revenue to keep current with the budget, in addition to pulling from savings, we just tried to, I mean, the mantra finally became keep it level, don't increase it at all. And one way to keep it level was not to increase
benefits, wages, not, yeah,
to cut back on workers,
right? Yeah, don't fill the positions. We're not that we're cutting back, we're just not filling the position,
right? Attrition, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, that's been one of the steps that we've taken to try to deal with the budget situation. And it will continue in some form or another until we have revenues that are sufficient to fund the budget that people want.
Another caller brought up, I don't know if you're familiar with the Mancho project of trucking near Tetlin or up to the Kinross up there on near Cleary Summit Ski Land. And I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but he was saying how that's not doing anything for the state of Alaska or locally here for him or his future generations. And yet we're putting infrastructure in for it, you know, in our road system.
Yeah, mining, I mean, that's a mining project, and mining has historically been taxed at fairly low levels to some degree for the same reason as fish.
Mm-hmm.
The profits just aren't as big as oil, and we don't have as much production. I mean, we have a lot of mines, but we don't have as much production as we do oil. So you'd have to tax mining a lot to bring in a lot of revenue to the state. And the testimony has been, and the review of experts has been, we wouldn't have mines then. We would tax them out of business. They wouldn't be economic. The investment would go someplace else. So it's a balance. I mean,
yeah,
it'd be great if we drew more revenue from mines, but the profitability just isn't there.
You know, we mine ecologically better than any place in the world, I think, in the harshest environments, in the hardest places to get to. So when they're looking at something, you know, if it's not economically fit, they're just not going to go in and do it. And your rate of royalty is a part of that equation.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, that's part of what we're going to hear from ConocoPhillips on the Willow project when we start talking about ring fencing and other aspects of increasing oil taxes. They'll say, look, our economics were built on the system you had. You start mucking with the system, it's going to affect our economics. Maybe we can stand a little bit of that, but you muck around with it too much, like ring fencing, and you're going to undo what we finally got done through the Biden administration, which is approving this project.
We're getting calls lined up. I'll try and keep them short, then relay it to you, okay?
Sure.
Here we go. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
Randy.
Hello, Randy. Keep it short because I have to relay it to Brad. What's on your mind?
Okay. I just wanted to say I agree with Brad. I know he can't hear the callers, but I agree with Brad when he said because of the declining revenue situation and everything, that something's got to break. And I want to say that I ultimately broke. You're talking to a broken man because I had to send back my 2022 PFD check. It was in the amount of $3,284, and I held on to it for a long time, up until March, in fact, this month. And I thought, no, the deficit is just too great, and that breaks me. And I sent it back and requested that it be donated to the general fund.
There you go. Thank you, sir. Greatly appreciate it. You have a great weekend.
Bye.
Brad, that was from Randy, and he's been a frequent caller. And what he did was he took his $3,200 dividend check that he got, and he sent it back. He did not cash it. He said it broke him. You know, if you got it, something has to break. So this is what he did to break that cycle. He did not cash his dividend. He sent it back, and he requested that it be donated back to the general fund. So kudos to Randy.
It wouldn't be a session on Problem Corner if we didn't get a call from Randy.
Yeah,
yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm glad he did that. If he can afford it, that's great for him. But why should Randy, you know, send back in his 32? Randy has told me in the past he's a middle income wage earner. Why should Randy have to send back in his $3,200 and the wealthiest, A, not send back in their check at all, and B, not have to contribute at all because we don't have taxes in this state? Why should they get off scot-free? Why Randy, I mean, this is Governor Hammond speaking, why should they get off scot-free? Why Randy has to send back in his $3,200? That's the problem with using PFD cuts to fund government. It has a bigger impact on middle and lower income Alaska families, and it really, as Governor Hammond put it, it lets the top 20% and non-residents who pay nothing entirely off the hook.
But the sad part about it, is it's the easiest thing to do because you're not creating a bill to tax anyone. It's the easiest thing to go get.
You know, David, it's a lot like your stockbroker. I mean, CFDs are intended to be the sharing of investment wealth to Alaska residents, like Randy, like a stockbroker does, and the legislature is supposed to be the stockbroker, right? And flowing through that share to Alaska residents. To me, what the legislature's done is a lot like a stockbroker saying, "Hey, I need a new Porsche, so I'm just going to grab a portion of your returns from your stock portfolio and pay for the new Porsche. Or I need a new house, or I need a new boat, and I'm just going to take your returns." And use them for myself. They make their lives better, but you know, Randy and other middle and lower income Alaska families end up worse off. So we need to find a system that has, and that's what I think a flat tax system does, that shares that burden proportionately among all Alaska families, so that it's not shoved mostly to middle and lower income Alaska families.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left, sir. Any other topic you want to discuss?
Oh, let's quickly do oil because it may be a bright side.
Okay.
Willow's approved. If we don't undermine it with taxes, Willow's approved, and it's going forward. That's going to be, at some point, it's going to be a plus economically in the near term, jobs and contracts. At some point, it's going to be a revenue plus for the state. The next big one and the one that people really need to focus on is PICA. The Santos Oil Search PICA project. That has a lot of oil potential, has a lot of jobs, and it's on state lands, which means that it would have a bigger revenue impact than Willow's ever going to have, bigger and more immediate revenue impact than Willow's ever going to have. So we spent a lot of effort getting Willow done, getting Willow permitted. Now the focus needs to be spending an equal amount, if not more, in supporting the PICA project and getting PICA done so we can bring that production up to speed and that revenue up to speed as well.
Yeah, the more oil in the pipeline, the better it is in one way or another, simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely right. And PICA's got great potential.
Where's the PICA field at?
So the PICA is east of NPRA. It's on lands east of NPRA, south, for those that know it, south of Kaparik.
Okay. Well, sir, I greatly appreciate your time and your call in and your wealth of information. Thank you so much. And enjoy yourself down there. And next time you come up to Fairbanks, let's go out and have lunch or watch a show together, okay?
I look forward to it, David. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I always enjoy it.
You take care. And Fairbanks, I will see you next week.